Are you tired of listening to the same playlists over and over again? Are you ready for something new? Discover the latest music from LGBTQIA musicians on Homoground. There's so much music ready for you to devour, like this song by Carl X. What are you waiting for? Visit homoground.com or search Homoground on your favorite podcast app. Same ground, different sound. You're on Homoground.
Welcome to The Astroholic Explains,
a podcast where we try to explain the universe's greatest mysteries with fictional stories, Q&As, and interviews.
Join Dr. Alfredo Carpinetti, the self-styled astroholic,
and Chris, my partner in life and in science.
Featuring experts and brilliant voice actors, join us in a light-hearted journey of discovery. This episode's question comes from Blue Mouse Eek on Twitter, who asks, my 4-year-old is space obsessed. He wants to know how far away the closest planet is that could support life. I'm not kidding, this boy knows about dwarf planets, exoplanets, gravity, makes the solar system in Lego, Play-Doh, and Minecraft.
Well, that is a great question. And my sincere answer is, I wish we knew. As far as we know, there's only one planet that can support life. Earth. Not saying there are no other planets out there in the universe. We just haven't found them. We've seen a lot of planets that are in the habitable zone, which is, as we explained in a few episodes, the region where life could potentially exist, or at least where we expect liquid water, ice, and water vapor on a planet. But we don't know if any of those planets have all the other aspects, all the other characteristics that could make a planet habitable.
A couple of years ago, there was a star system found, and I can't remember its name now. It wasn't Proxima. It was,
Proxima is a good example. Proxima has 2 planets now confirmed. One is a gas giant, but the closer one, it's a Earth-sized rocky planet in the star habitable zone. Proxima Centauri is a red dwarf, so much smaller than the Sun. The planet orbits in just a matter of days.
TRAPPIST
one system.
There was, when that was discovered,
yeah,
there was one of the planets. There's 7 planets in the TRAPPIST star system, solar system.
TRAPPIST one,
and one of those was touted for a possibility of, well, being habitable or having life because of its conditions.
They are. I think 3 of them are in the habitable zone.
What is... Sorry to go off on another little tangent, but what is the first 3 things that astronomers would look for that might suggest life on a planet?
So, at the moment, we are not able to find those characteristics, but let's assume that we are few years down the line, there is the extremely large telescope, which I know it's a very unimaginative name, but it's going to be a revolutionary instrument in studying the universe. There is the James Webb Space Telescope. Then you might think, oh, at least this is an original name. Yes, a name after a homophobe, misogynist, massive racist. Yeah. What can you do apart complaining?
That telescope's never going to come out anyway.
Yeah, it was supposed to be launched a decade ago and has had a very, very long gestation. So those kind of instrument, the next generation of observatories, should have the capabilities to study the atmospheres of this exoplanet. And this this is how we are going to find the closest habitable planet to Earth. What do you need to look for? You need to look for an atmosphere. A planet that can support life. And again, we are assuming life as we know it. There might be life completely different from us out there. Life as we know it, you need a thick atmosphere. And this is why those planets like TRAPPIST-1 or the one around Proxima, we're a bit uncertain. We're thinking they are very unlikely that they might have atmosphere, because red dwarfs, although they're smaller than our sun, they're a lot more active. They produce a lot more flare. And since the planets are a lot closer, those flares might be eroding away the atmosphere.
It could just be a star system of Marses.
Yeah. What you need to have to guarantee an atmosphere, then it's a magnetic field. A magnetic field will protect from the flaring of the star and also from cosmic rays, etc., giving more chance to the molecule of lives to evolve. Let's assume that we have this atmosphere. What can astronomers look at in the atmosphere? And they're looking for signals that are categorically life. They call it the biosignatures. By studying the atmosphere of these planets, they hope to just get a glimpse of what kind of chemicals, what kind of compounds are present in the atmosphere of the planets. So something that is strong link to life could be methane, could be carbon dioxide. Oxygen clearly is important for us.
But, a little bit.
Yeah, no, but before the first photosynthetic organism evolved on Earth, life on Earth didn't use oxygen. Oxygen is toxic. Then the first photosynthetic organism appeared, and 98% of all species went extinct because wow. of this primordial algae. Technically, what we do with oxygen is a very, very slow combustion. In a way, we are a fire breather. It is like we are breathing something that is just burns, and what we do, we use it to burn as molecules, but it is the same reaction. If, again, we're assuming habitability and life is like us, we expect a planet that has oxygen, but we cannot have an atmosphere of pure oxygen that is still reactive. So you need a nice element that keeps it quite stable, like nitrogen. So again, we're looking at things based on Earth is the place that we know life exists and life works and life thrives. So habitability should be like us. And this on similar topic but different out of the spectrum is why it is so difficult to go and explore other places in the solar system, because they are so incredibly inhospitable.
What's the most inhospitable planet in our solar system
that you could stand on?
Venus. Not Mercury?
Nope, Venus is hotter.
Oh.
Also, there is
acid rain,
and on the ground is, I think, 94, 98 atmosphere in the 90s. So it's like being...
crushed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crushed.
Wait, doesn't it rain diamonds on Venus?
No.
Oh. Where does it rain diamonds?
Different planet.
Okay.
We think the atmosphere of the ice giants, so Neptune and Uranus, should be dense enough at a certain level to crush carbon into diamonds, which will then rain down towards the core of the planet.
Diamonds are carbon, right?
Diamonds are carbon, yes.
I know a lot of sci-fi delves into the subject of an alien life that is not carbon-based.
Very good.
Silicon, for example.
Yeah, that was a very good segue from the Carbon rate, a diamond rating. Well done.
Are there any planets in our solar system where silicon is abundant, apart from Earth?
Damn it, because I was about to say, you're standing on it. Silicon is an extremely abundant element everywhere.
Do you think that's why sci-fi tropes tend to go for a silicon-based life form that's different from ours?
That's not the reason. I think we need to go back to your GCSE in chemistry. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no, let's not go there.
Well, I'm afraid so. So let's open another chapter of Chris's...
dark past of science.
Education in Welsh. So what is... how do you say silicon in Welsh?
Silicon.
Okay. How do you say bond in Welsh?
Bond.
Oh, God.
Bondi ionic is ionic bonding.
Okay. Can carbon form an ionic bond?
Yes.
No.
Damn. One question.
Yeah. So, carbon is group 4 of the periodic table, and silicon is also group 4.
So is that why scientists sort of say it's the same sort of chemical the building blocks?
Yes. So what is interesting about carbon? What do you remember about covalent bonds, which I'm assuming
bond covalent.
Yes.
Yeah. I really, really, really don't remember much, to be honest. I was not a fan of chemistry. It did not agree with me. I don't know.
Okay. In a covalent bond, the atoms shared electrons.
Okay.
So elements in group 4 can form 4 bonds because they have 4 electrons on their outer shell. So they can form bonds with 4 different atoms, they can form double bonds, they can form triple bonds.
Which I'm guessing is good in general, because it means it can grow, it can be bigger, it can...
Yeah, we're getting there.
Have more chemicals attached to it.
They're very good at forming chains.
Yes.
So,
like proteins.
Like proteins, or DNA, etc. Mm. Carbon is very versatile. I would assume that a 4, they're not going to show, they're going to make him listen to this episode, but carbon is the slot of the periodic table. Is there, ready to party, want to make friends, and like a good slot, those friendship lasts, those bonds can be strong, and as a big network of, can create a big network of slots. So they're thinking, oh, we can do the same with silicon, silicon is the same. But given that silicon is heavier, has a lot more protons and neutrons in the nucleus of the atom, and more electrons, but again, only 4 on the outer shell, it forms the same amount of bonds, etc., but it's not as... the chains are believed not to be as strong. So it is a fascinating idea. There are things like self-replicating silicon molecules, but not in the same way as DNA, for example. It is a very, very cool thought experiment, but there's not been any evidence to suggest that you can have a silicon-based life form. But, as I say, never say never. It's we haven't found, I think, any strong evidence that life is just like us. We just need to assume, given that we only know one example of life, that the way we work is a good model. So it's the weird balancing of we are very special, we're the only one, and we need to pretend that we are not special, because there is no reason why we should be special. This is why it is quite likely that the blueprint that make us us are shared across the universe.
And that's a fantastic note to end on.
Fantastic. I'm sorry that I cannot pinpoint a location in the galaxy where there is an habitable planet, but I'm hoping that maybe in a few years' time, post-2025 and ELT coming online, we might have a better idea of where to look, at least.
Thank you very much.
And this is it for another episode of The Astrolic Explains.
Follow us on social media at The Astroholic and feel free to send in more questions.